from the Dallas Corridor area.
Hi, everybody. I'm an addict named Karen.
Hi, Karen.
And I'm feeling super nervous this afternoon, but for some reason, no topic makes me more nervous to share than traditions. Well, except maybe if somebody asked me to share on the concepts, but that hasn't happened yet. For some reason, I feel like any other topic I can just share my experience, strength, and hope, and like that's enough. But for some reason, with traditions, I feel like I have to bring some like deep explanation. There was this guy in my area for a few years who was really involved in service and wanted everybody to know about it, and he was like the expert of everything. And the home group I have now, I've had two home groups, which I'll tell you about, but the home group I have now is a step and tradition study meeting, and we read out of It Works How and Why, and then we have a leader. And there were so many times at that meeting when this guy would be sitting next to me, the leader would be sharing on one tradition or another, and the guy next to me, that's wrong. He doesn't know what he's talking about. She's an idiot. That's not what that tradition means. Don't you know what anonymity is? Like, constantly, this criticism. And so, like, when I was asked to lead on traditions 1 and 2, I hear this guy's voice in my mind, like, everything I think, no, that's wrong. That's not the tradition. And so I was talking to my sponsor. I was over at the dough roller having some pizza and salad before I came in here and talking to my sponsor, just telling her about how I was feeling nervous. And she told me that, just like with any other topic, you have your experience, you have your strength, you have your hope, you have the way that I have the way that the principles of these traditions affect me in my life and how they connect to my experience. So that's what I'm going to share with you today, hopefully. I brought my book, my basic text. I had to sign a form that says I wouldn't bring my big book, which I thought was funny because, I mean, I don't have a big book, but anyway, I had to sign off for that before I came. But I brought it because there were a couple of sentences that I wanted to read, and I didn't trust myself to not be nervous enough to, like, memorize them or anything. So first I'll read the tradition. Tradition 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on NA unity. And the sentence I want to read to you is that one of the most important things about our new way of life is being a part of a group of addicts seeking recovery. And I think I had an idea of the importance of that before I ever came to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, because I tried to get clean on my own for a while. And, well, first I just switched up the drugs. Like, oh, well, I'm just going to cut out this and this because, like, those are the worst. And then, like, I'll just do these because these are fine. I'm only doing these drugs, so this is okay. And that wasn't really working out for me very well. So then I was like, okay, I'm from Virginia. I'll move to Wyoming, and then I'll be fine. And that will solve all of my problems. I got to get away from these people that are making me use all the time. And that didn't work. Actually, I was in such a remote area then that moving to Wyoming taught me, if nothing else, that alcohol is a drug too. You literally had to drive 8 hours to get anything else, and it was horrible. It was not even worth getting. So there was a lot of alcohol going on there, and I was having a lot of problems with that. And, you know, it's funny because I used to always say, like, oh, well, it's only, or I'm just drinking right now or whatever. But in reality, the worst consequences I had for me of my active addiction were from that drug. Some of the other drugs I had, the effect was, like, me laying on a couch like that. That's all I was doing. I wasn't getting into any trouble. I wasn't making any decisions at all. So they weren't bad. I mean, I was, like, not going to school and not going to work, but other than, like, getting fired and failing out of school, you know, I didn't have any negative consequences. So I moved back from Wyoming because that just wasn't working for me. And I kept using, but I would only use if I felt like it was something really good, like a really good type of drug. Like, I'd be clean for 2 weeks, and then there'd be, like, this really good, somebody be like, oh, this one's really good, you got to try this. Oh, because I'm a connoisseur, you know, so I just only will take the finest ones now. I'm not going to be, like, just some person who just uses anything. I mean, I was that person for years before, but now I have, what is the word? That word when you have, like, it's like standards. Yeah, now I have standards with what I'll use. So that didn't really work either. And I was just having lots and lots of problems, and I went to a doctor. My mom took me to a doctor so that I could get all of my problems solved, and the doctor sent me to a therapist so that she could solve my problems. And she kind of did, because she gave me this. She gave me my basic text. She was like, yeah, you might have all kinds of problems, but really, you're a drug addict. And that was news to me. It really was. And so she gave me this book, and she wrote in the front, read page through page 22, and then come back next week. Oh, and go to a meeting, Shelby. Go to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting and talk to some women and get a sponsor. And I had no idea what a sponsor was. And I also knew that there were no NA meetings within like a 20-minute drive of my house. So not that I wasn't driving like an hour and a half for all kinds of other things, but I was like, 20 minutes, that's too far. I'll go to an AA meeting. It's probably the same. And I went, and I was like 20, 21, and everybody in there was like over 50. They were all talking about gratitude, and I was like, what the hell does this have to do with using drugs? I cannot even understand what you people are talking about. This is not for me. And I left, and then I was like, all right, I can do this on my own. I'm good. But over those next couple months, and this does actually relate to that sentence I read about needing that group of addicts seeking recovery, over the next couple months, I did keep going back to that therapist, and I did my homework, except for the like specific part of going to the NA meeting. I read the book, and I kept saying to her, like, why can't I just find some like cool people to hang out with, like me, like really cool people like me, but who just aren't using? And she was like, didn't you think that's what those NA meetings were for? I'm like, no. Those are a bunch of, like, weird drug addict people. I don't want to hang out with them. I'm not going to be friends with them. Are you crazy? But that's what I needed. And I was so closed-minded and judgmental that I couldn't see that. So, anyway, I finally did go to my... This is, like, all of that took probably 6 or 8 months or something. And then I finally did go to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And that was actually the first week of July of 2001. And I've been clean ever since. I went to that first meeting. And that meeting was called the Bottom of the Mountain Group, which used to meet in Round Hill, Virginia. And then it met in Leesburg, and then it met in Percival. And it meets in Percival again. But I had that home group for a very long time. And at that home group, that's where I became part of a group of addicts seeking recovery. And now, at first, I was not that addict that immediately was like 90 and 90 or 120 and 90 or anything like that. I was just going to, like, do the minimum because I'm not as bad as you people over there. Like, I am different. I'm very different. So different that I can skip the steps that say God, and I can just go to one meeting a week, and I can just take some of the suggestions, and... that didn't work either. But what I did get at that first meeting, well, not the first meeting, because they said there weren't any women there with the year clean, but at the second meeting, I went back there the next week, and there was a woman there with the year clean, and she became my sponsor. And becoming a part of that group and finding that sponsor saved me. That first meeting I walked into, I immediately felt a part of. I was terrified. I was young. I went alone. I was, like, shaking. There were all these, like, old tattooed guys smoking cigarettes outside, and I was just like, this must be the right place, but I'm so scared. And I went in there, and people gave me hugs. And that meeting is a round-robin format, and every single person has to say their name. And in NA meetings, we say also that we're addicts. And so for the first time, at my first meeting ever, I had to open my mouth and say, my name's Karen, and I'm an addict. And after the meeting, I went in my car and just cried for like 20 minutes out of relief, because that was the first time I had ever admitted that to myself. Like, this woman that, you know, that gave me the book, she told me that, but I hadn't started to own that yet. And I didn't fully own it then, but that was a big part of my process for surrendering, by just opening my mouth and saying that the first time. And I really did, even though immediately I didn't go to meetings every day, I did pick up pretty quickly, I mean, not drugs, but like with recovery, And by the time I had 60 days clean, I was going in a van full of addicts with my sponsor driving from Virginia to Montreal, Canada for a convention. My first convention ever, I had like 62 days clean. Everybody was standing up on the tables at the banquet, like waving their white napkins in surrender as the DJ had the spotlight zipping all over the room. And I was like filled with enthusiasm and like, what is this amazing fun thing? I thought fun was dead. I'm clean now. I can't use. Like, how are these people having fun? There are no drugs in here. No one's messed up. Well, maybe a couple people were, but I didn't know it. And, I mean, you never know. There might be a couple. But out of the thousands of people there, you know, it was just amazing to me. And it was really important to be part of that group, yes, my home group, but then extending beyond just my home group to the fellowship and really getting involved. And, like, I went everywhere. People were going someplace, I went. I had a car, I gave people rides. I started going more than 20 minutes away. I drove to meetings in Winchester and D.C. and West Virginia and Maryland and Virginia Beach, and I went to conventions all over. I went to San Diego. I went to meetings in like England and Spain, and you know, I had boyfriends in different places. I'm like, all right, we'll go to a meeting over here. That boyfriend, and that was something different. It's a different topic, but but I went to a lot of meetings, and I really got involved in the fellowship, and I stayed clean. Like, that's the important part. All the rest of the stuff, you know, I have time to work on. You know, I need to stay clean first. And one of the other things that it says in this tradition is that those who did not continue to be an active part of the fellowship faced a rough road, and that is so true, and it's been true for me too, because just though I've been clean this whole time doesn't mean that I haven't faced that rough road. And it also doesn't mean that I've been an active part of the fellowship the whole time. There was, when I was pregnant with my first child, like 4 years ago, I, for a lot of different reasons, started withdrawing from the fellowship. And part of it was because just physically it was hard for me to just get the energy to get up and drive 20 minutes to a meeting, and I just didn't want to. And part of it was that I was just focused inward on like this cool different thing that was happening, and I was obsessing about that instead of, you know, other things. And I wasn't staying connected. I wasn't going to my home group regularly. I mean, I was not even making a meeting a week at this time. And to me, like, regularly means like at least like once a week, not like monthly or anything, for me anyway. And before then, I had been going to multiple meetings every week. I had a lot of sponsees. I was really connected. And during this time, I just kept withdrawing and isolating. And then I got put on bed rest for like 2 months, and I couldn't leave the house. And I mean, there were a couple times when people brought meetings into me, but I was in no way an active part of the fellowship during that time. And I paid the price for it spiritually. And my disease resurfaced so strongly. And the obsession, and like, yeah, there was obsession about being pregnant. And like, that didn't have a ton of negative side effects, except for I was like 80% unproductive at work because I was always Googling, like, what does this symptom mean? What does this symptom mean? What does this symptom mean? When is my baby coming? Like, Google's going to tell me. But, I typed it in so many times. Like, it was really, I mean, I couldn't stop myself. But it wasn't just that. Like, the obsession and compulsion, it was, everything that was a bad idea seemed like a good idea. And there was one point where I'm driving home from, I don't know, probably not a meeting, 7 months clean, not 7 months clean, 7 months pregnant, and I start thinking, like, you know what? I probably need to start smoking cigarettes now just to, like, calm myself a little bit. I mean, I never even was a real smoker. I smoked some when I was using, but I didn't even, I mean, I hadn't smoked in years. And I'm like, oh, now that I'm pregnant, like, most people quit smoking when they're pregnant. But this is how crazy I was at that time. And it wasn't until, like, that thought, and I actually almost pulled into the gas station to get cigarettes, and my dad called me. I feel like my higher power stepped in, because my family, like, honestly, he'd rather have me drink before he had me smoke cigarettes. Like, that's how my family feels about cigarettes. And he called me, like, right as I was pulling in. And he was like, hey, what are you doing? And I couldn't be like, pulling up to the gas station to buy cigarettes when I'm 7 months pregnant with your grandbaby. And so I kept driving. I pulled right back out. But, you know, honestly, that was a really difficult time for me. And even the first couple months after, it was like a whole new world, like trying to adjust to life. Like, it's not all about me anymore. I have this baby now. I have this child in my life. And it made things difficult for me. And I'm sharing that now in part because in happy news, we're now expecting another child, our third. And it's a blessing. But I also need to be really upfront about it because, in a way, it's been the most dangerous part of my recovery is when I've been pregnant. This is my third pregnancy. I'm not that far along, and I've already missed my home group 2 times. And so that is like a serious red flag for me, you know? And I'm like, oh, well, I was feeling really nauseous. And yeah, I was feeling really nauseous. And, you know, that's fine. But when I talked to my sponsor about it, she was like, but you still need to be, like it says in here, an active part of the fellowship. And she's like, if you need to find an online meeting, if you need to have people bring meetings to your house, you need to figure out a way to continue to be an active part of that fellowship, because what this tradition is all about is that, like, NA will survive without me, but I will not survive without NA. And I have to really keep that up front, you know, no matter what. Like, yes, I want to have children, I want to have a family, but just like with any blessing, sometimes the good times are the times when our disease works us even harder. So anyway, I just need to be upfront about that, that that's something going on with me now. But I'm here. I wasn't going to come to this convention. I have 2 little kids. I have a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old. And I'm like, it's a pain to go to a convention with 2 little kids. This is a big pain. They can't come in here. They're not quiet. But you know what? God worked in my life. And I was asked to do this workshop. And if I had not been asked to do this workshop, I would not be here. I wouldn't. And this is helping me connect. I only just got here a couple of hours ago. I've already gotten like 60 hugs from people. I've seen people I haven't seen in years. I'm like just so nourished in my spirit by being here. And so by somebody calling me, who I didn't even know, to ask me to lead this workshop, he had heard from someone else to call me from a different area. And you know, thank God, because now I'm here and I get to be a part of this, if only for today. Like, I may not get to be a part of the convention the whole weekend, but at least for a few hours today, I get to do that, and I'm really grateful for that. I have no idea how long I've talked, but I feel like I should say something about tradition too now, since I have to talk about 2 things. So I'm going to say I'm going to read tradition 2 first, which says, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. So if you heard me earlier, this was going to be one of the traditions that I would skip because it says God and it's like capitals in there too. And it just, I was very uncomfortable with the whole idea of a higher power and the word God. Like, I couldn't even say the word God when I got clean. I don't know exactly what caused it, but I just had a serious issue with any idea of spirituality and religion, 2 different things, but I connected them both, and I was very uncomfortable with it, and very, again, judgmental and closed-minded, like I was with everything when I got clean. But since I have been clean, I've opened my heart to higher power, and I've opened my mind to realize something that this tradition is about, that it's, I'm not in control, and it's not all about me. I don't get to make all the decisions, and when I do, it's usually fucked. And, you know, the first sentence that I underlined in here, by nature, we are strong-willed, self-centered people who are thrust together in NA. And I'm like, me? Strong-willed? Self-centered? No. And that really struck me, like, wait, self-centered and strong-willed. And when I think about the traditions, they certainly apply to NA, obviously, and my participation in my home group and in service. But they also apply to my, and I've heard other people share about this too, to my other group that I'm a big part of, which is my family. And all of the principles underlying the traditions apply, they all apply, and they all help me to function better as an addict in Narcotics Anonymous and as a mother, as a wife, as a daughter, as a sister. And this one line, it really just struck me as I was reading it earlier, first it made me think about this other sentence about those of us who have been involved in service or in getting a group started sometimes have a hard time letting go. It made me think about how, since I've been clean, I've been to lots and lots and lots of different NA groups, like I said before, all over the country and the world, and I've been a part of a lot of them. I've had 2 home groups, but I've regularly attended lots of other meetings, but I did start 2 meetings, and when I say I mean I. And there's no God in I, or is that like a saying? I don't know. And so one of them, I mean, I picked the time, 4:30 in the afternoon on a Thursday. That's a convenient for everyone, right? Wait, no. In like a small town with like not that many addicts. And everyone has like a job that ends at 5. But not me. My job got out at 3:45. And I want to go to a meeting before I go home. Because once I go home, I don't want to go back out. Because it's not convenient. I have to drive 20 minutes. So I want to go on my way home. And I pick the format, and I pick what we're going to read, and I pick. Is that meeting still going on today?
No.
I mean, it did go on for a little while, but that is not the spirit of starting an NA group. It's supposed to be about this. We rely on a loving God as he expresses himself rather than our own personal opinion or ego. And what I found with that is that it's a lot easier for me to be a contributing member of a group that's already existing than for me. It's too easy for me to take control of everything with like the idea of starting a meeting, because immediately I want to just take control of everything. But so with, I had my first home group, like I mentioned, for like 11 years, and it was really, really hard for me to let that one go, because it was like, it still is, I mean, it's still going on. It's like a fun social meeting. Everybody shares. There's a bell. There's a song. I just loved it. The energy was great. And as I had stayed clean, there were all of these people who were still there at that meeting who were still clean too and who knew me. And by the time I got like 8, 9, 10 years clean, that really meant something to me. Because for those of you who have been clean, you know, multiple years, at least the way that I've experienced it, sometimes I go in a meeting and I'm the one with the most clean time. And I don't like that. I still want to be the baby sometimes. Like, I want somebody to remember me when I was, like, the crazy fucking newcomer who was just very crazy. And I was called the vegetable girl because I would bring vegetable, like, bushel baskets of vegetables from my garden into the meeting. Like, here's a bunch of tomatoes and cucumbers for you. I want people around who still, who know me from the whole time, who see how far I've come, who aren't like, oh, that's like the normal school teacher Karen who's wearing a cardigan and like has like clean hair. And, you know, I wasn't always that person. I didn't used to shower very often at all. And, you know, sometimes people meet me now and they're like, you're not a really real addict. You're pretty normal. Or I don't know. Maybe they don't say that. But that's how I feel sometimes. But it's important to me. Like, there were people at that meeting who, when I first started, had 15, 20, 25, 30 years clean and were still going there and were still clean and now had 25, 35, 40 years clean. And that was really important to me. Part of that being a group and part of that, you know, I wasn't in control. I contributed. I had service positions there. I was definitely a part of that group. But I wasn't the group. And that was really important to me. But because of having kids and my husband's work schedule and different things, that we moved and that meeting's further away, I had to get a new home group last year, and which I love. And it's, I think I mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, it's a step in tradition meeting. It's called Keyhole to Recovery, which meets on Thursday nights in Sterling, Virginia. And in that meeting, it's not like the fun, crazy song singing meeting, but it's like a really cool, like, serious book study. And we have leaders on the steps and on the traditions. And that's valuable to me because I don't get to as many meetings as I did when I was first clean. Because I have the little ones at home. I have a work. My husband is in recovery. We have to take turns going to meetings. So when I get to a meeting, like, I kind of want it to be all about business. I get to fellowship before and after. But I really want to, like, read the literature and hear that focused message about it. And I value that. And we have, like, business meetings where in my old home group, we would stand in a huddle and, like, talk like we were auctioneers, like speed talking, like, I don't know what I'm going to vote here. And it would go so fast. The whole group conscience would be over in like 2 minutes. But here at my new home group, we sit around, we sit down, we sit at a table, we have like an agenda, and we actually talk through things. And, you know, they both have worked in their own way. For that group, it worked, and for the group I have now, it works, and that's fine. But I really appreciate seeing those different ways of how our higher power can work to make a group work. And both of those groups are successful, and they attract a lot of people. And, like, I didn't force them. I didn't make them. Like, it was a group of people all working together with the guidance of their higher power. And did you give me that? Is that the thing you're giving me now? Okay. So the last thing I want to mention is when I first started talking about tradition two, I said how these apply in my family as well. And, you know, so just to apply, like, both of those situations with my home group, you know, those are things in my life. But with my family as well, coming back to that idea of trying to put aside that strong will and that self-centeredness, that's been coming up a lot in my home life, where over the past few months, like, I just went over I did another first step, and I went over it with my sponsor, and one of the things that came up that was causing unmanageability in my life was that when I'm having a conversation with my husband, I come to it already being right and already knowing the answer and not listening and not valuing what he has to say. I don't know if anybody can relate to that, but that's what I've been doing. And it came to my attention, like, one of the blessings and also hardships of having a spouse who's in recovery is that sometimes he's the one there to, like, be honest with me about a character defect that's hurting him. And, like, that is really hard to hear. When he told me how much it was hurting him that he wasn't being heard by me, like, by his wife, the person who, like, chose to be in a relationship with him and love him, it really hurt my ego, made me feel, I don't know what the feeling is, guilty and ashamed, and, like, why am I hurting this person I love so much? And making me want to, it reminded me of being in my sixth step again, where, like, I would see myself acting out on a behavior and not being able to stop it. And even recently, even since we've had that conversation, there are still times where it's like, I just come in there with my strong will. I don't allow that time, like what this tradition talks about, like letting our higher power in, taking a step back to listen. Like, for me to know what my higher power's will is for anything, which I never know 100% for sure, but I certainly know that it's not for me to be critical and hurtful of the people that I love. But when I don't take that time to step back, have that, like, moment of silence, have that moment before I'm impulsive, before I say that first thing on my mind, then I get the negative outcome of my self-centered disease, and I hurt people that I love. And so that's something that I've been struggling with and working on, and I don't know, I'm not at the point now where I'm even always aware of it, but I'm getting better, and I'm talking about it with my sponsor and praying about it, so I guess there's hope in that. Anyway, I want to thank you guys for coming to this meeting today. I really needed it, so thanks for letting me share.